coming up this week on the Course of Life podcast, we'll recap some night golf in China with a familiar face on top, plus week 10 college football storylines, NFL week 9. We're calling this a smorgasbord episode because we got all sorts of food news too, an update to my Dunkin' Donuts saga from last year, and much more. Plus, our guest is a great interview with Cyrus Jansen. We've had him on before. We're going to run back a great conversation we had with him about his time, where the tournament in China was last weekend, plus some food culture and a whole lot more. But first, when you're out golfing, where your phone rests for 5 hours is a big issue these days. The cup holder typically belongs to beers and waters. The front compartments are for all that other junk. It's a really scary proposition where your phone's going to sit during the round, but this is an unsolved mystery until Desert Fox Golf came along with the phone caddy. It's the go-to phone holder for golf carts designed to keep your phone safe and at your fingertips. With sliding wings and a faceplate that adjusts to fit almost every iPhone and Android model, it Velcros right on in seconds. Keep your yardage and scoring apps open where you need them to be seen, play music with ease, and watch the game on your phone, answer texts and calls, do it all at the same time while you hit the course. With the phone caddy from Desert Fox Golf, it's the most functional way to keep your phone safe and ready on the course at all times. We thank them again for their support during Breast Cancer Awareness Month last month, and now it is that holiday season time. Mike, this is a perfect gift. It's at that juicy little price point where you can get it for any golfer, you know?
It's a stocking stuffer, really. It's a good size. It's a good price point. It's just easy.
This is the time for everyone to go to desertfoxgolf.com. If you know anyone who golfs, this is a super perfect Secret Santa gift. It hits that exact price point that you know and love every year. Also, follow them on social media for the latest promotions and golf efficiently with the Desert Fox phone caddy. That's desertfoxgolf.com. Plus, if you're needing training aids, then Golf Training Aids is also the place for you, and that's golftrainingaids.com. We're here to get you a site-wide discount on everything you need to help your game, so all you need to do is follow us on social media. Our Facebook page is The Course of Life Podcast, or you can follow us on Twitter as well. We'll be tweeting out and Facebook posting our link and our discount code. The discount code is COL10, COL10 for 10% off of your purchase of anything in the store at golftrainingaids.com. So follow us on Facebook or Twitter to grab that link and get yourself a deal that will help lower your scores today.
Hello, interwebs, and welcome to another edition of Course of Life, presented by Izzo Golf and Desert Fox Golf. This is a podcast where we talk about everything happening in the world of golf, plus other things that interest us from the world of sports and pop culture. I'm Michael, he's Alex, and Alex, like you said, we were back in China again this past weekend for the WGC HSBC Championship in China.
Yeah. Cyrus Jansen's home course. We'll hear a little bit more about his time there a little later on. But this is interesting because, Mike, this used to be kind of the afterthought World Golf Championship because of where it sits on the calendar. But it delivered this year. There was a lot of quotables, and we'll get to that in a moment. But Rory McIlroy winning again, a familiar face at the top, super consistent all week, wins in a playoff over Xander Schauffele, who we know and love as well. That guy finds his way into contention a ton, but impressive victory for Rory overseas.
Yeah, you know, he just was finally able to put four good rounds together to win for a change, as opposed to the rest of the season where he just put four good rounds together every tournament.
Yeah, I know. He kind of splattered his wins like very kind of evenly across the calendar year, a little bit of a lull in the summer for himself, but obviously he had that notable win at the Players' Championship. And, you know, he's really focused on being a year-round player, and he hasn't denied in the past that he doesn't necessarily have the most pure ambitions for, you know, the love of the game that maybe some other golfers have. He knows that he's in this for winning tournaments, winning money, winning trophies, and being the greatest. And in order to do that, you got to be fresh year round, the way this full 12 month schedule is on tour. And he's proving that he's taken advantage of the offseason months. So nice little pop in victory there, and a good check for Rory heading out to China.
Yeah, he's certainly going against what the majority of the big players do. Of course, Tiger, Phil, Brooks Koepka, all of them, they really focus on the majors. They don't focus on the rest of these tournaments. Tiger, of course, was able to win them all, pretty much.
Yes. Masters and the Zozo. Yes. What a combo for him this year. And Phil, Mike, you mentioned Phil.
Yeah.
Out of the world top 50 for the first time in 26 years, almost our lifetime, Mike.
You know, I think I'm more surprised that it took this long for him to drop out of the top 50.
It's impressive.
He hasn't been as good the last 5 years.
And he's been trying so many things right now. He's always been a tinkerer, but now he's doing like the, you remember in the summer, he did the 10-day hard fast, which we talked about, like the full cleanse.
The coffee drink.
That's right. That mysterious coffee drink. So he's really like going to all ends of his health and exercise and trying to reform himself as he heads towards the number 50 in age as well, too. I think he's 48 or 49 now. So Phil just trying to figure out an answer here as he turns the corner into kind of the twilight of his career. You know, we talk about every year how he's still missing that U.S. Open to really complete his tournament and achievements in his career.
And I don't think it's going to happen.
It's dwindling every year, Mike. It looks deep.
I got a great idea for Phil.
What do you got?
All right. I'm pretty sure he's probably going to go play on the senior circuit, but yes. I got a better idea. He can go join the team at CBS and be out there calling everything that happens.
Oh, man.
Wouldn't it be great to have him in the booth?
I like this. I like that we're thinking way ahead of everyone else. Everyone else is talking about how much longer Phil has to play. We're already just throwing him up on the fairways next to David Faraday. I love that idea. He would be great on the course.
Give him the mic and the headset and put him out there on the course and talking to players. That would be fantastic. That'd be good television right there.
That's next level thinking for Phil's future.
Idea. Much, much better idea than we had with CBS putting, I'm blanking his name because that's how much I like him in the booth with Jim Nantz for the NFL.
It's unbelievable. Like the depths that CBS has gone to. They hacked McCord and Costas last week.
Oh, man.
They brought on Davis Love. I'm waiting for that next move when they drop a bomb to see who's joining that broadcast team. Hopefully it's someone that we can all get behind because I'm a little queasy at this point.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
We'll see. We mentioned there, you know, Brooks Koepka, Rory McIlroy, Tiger Woods. You remember a couple weeks ago when Brooks said Rory hasn't won a major in the 5 years that he's been on tour?
Yeah, we did document that.
Rory won. So
he did.
And Brooks Koepka's hurt, so.
Not a major, but a WGC. Yeah. That's an impressive answer. Yeah. And I love that since Brooks dropped this comment in passing a few weeks ago, the winners have been Justin Thomas, Tiger, and Rory. All three guys who, if you ask them, they would definitely consider themselves a direct competitor and rival of Brooks Koepka on any given day.
I got an idea. I don't think we've heard. There's no match happening this Thanksgiving, right? We don't have the match this year.
You know, we had that rumor a few months ago about something 2-on-2 related, but I've seen absolutely no promotion or marketing around anything. So I'm led to believe there isn't one.
Pay to see Brooks versus Rory right now.
That would be a high price ticket for sure.
Yeah.
You might even be able to pay-per-view that one, even though they'll end up giving away the link for free just like last year. But
that's good because I don't want to pay for it at all. But.
Yeah, so we mentioned Tiger and Brooks as well, too. This is going to become an issue now. So we have the President's Cup on the horizon here in the next few weeks. And later this week, Tiger and Ernie Els are going to be making their picks, apparently, their captain's picks to finalize the teams.
Yep.
So this could be an issue with Brooks now because he's a little hurt right now.
Yeah. You know, it's going to be interesting to see if Tiger's got to make five captain's picks instead of four. I'd argue that he doesn't really need to make four because we're pretty sure he's going to pick himself.
I think so. We all think so. It's kind of the elephant in the room right now. It's almost awkward if he doesn't at this point.
Yeah. I mean, the names in there, we're pretty positive we're going to see Tiger playing in the President's Cup as well. Probably going to see Gary Woodland.
Yep.
And then it gets down to who else is it going to be? I want to know why isn't Kevin Na on most people's lists?
A friend of Tiger's as well, too.
He's friend of Tiger's. He's got 2 wins and 11 starts. Why is he not in this conversation right now?
Yeah, he deserves to be. And you know how much we'd love to hate on him over the years, but he's really kind of renaissanced his personality and his outlook towards the game. And
he's
pretty fiery when it comes down to it. And him walking those putts in on a international match play stage, that could be pretty electric. I'm down for that. So we'll see what Tiger picks here later this week, and we'll recap the final rosters on next week's episode for sure.
We will indeed. We'll keep an eye on it. Another thing we would talk about is just Winslow.
Our guest last week.
He was just on the show. He was pretty awesome to hear. Great stories. And what did he shared that great story, or you shared your story about playing with clubs that you've never played with before.
Yes. So I shot almost my round of the year with my mom's worn out clubs.
Yep.
Like clubs designed for women with extremely whippy shafts. Mm-hmm. I made like a half a swing every time I connected with the ball and I flushed it. I was hitting it everywhere I needed to. I played a great round. So I asked Joseph last week, and you can take a listen to the past week's interview and get the full story, what he thinks he'd shoot with replacement clubs or maybe a set from his childhood. He said even par. I thought that was pretty aggressive, but you know, he'd just be making those hip high, hip hugging swings. Lo and behold, Mike, he gets to his next tournament right after he gets off the phone with me. His clubs aren't there. The dreaded no club arrival when you get to a tournament. That is a nightmare scenario for any golfer.
Very bad.
Yeah. So he goes through that. He piecemeals together 14 clubs and makes a makeshift set a couple days before the tournament in Argentina. And lo and behold, texts me right after the first round, Mike. And he says, Alex, I have an answer to your question about what I would shoot with a replacement set. And the answer is 3 under par. He shot 3 under par round one. Fortunately, the new set did arrive in time for round number two. Kept the mojo going, shot 11 under, almost a top 20 finish there. He's on to this week's tournament down in South America on the PGA Tour Latino America. So, hey, even if you don't have your normal clubs, I'm not allowing that as an excuse for anyone anymore. You can do anything you want if you put your mind to it and you swing smoothly.
Especially in the game of golf.
That's the moral there.
Played between the ears.
That's right. Yeah, that's the moral of that story.
Good for him. We'll keep watching. And maybe he'll just need, you know, a set of clubs he's never played with every Thursday just to get him going.
Yeah, that's what I said. I said the only logical thing now is to just use a different set every single round. He laughed, and I don't think he took it seriously, but I actually was being serious, just so he knows.
Let's talk about Ricky Fowler.
Yes, that's right. Ricky, big time celeb move. It seemed like, so there were, it's always big news and hubbub when a celebrity joins Instagram. The big one last week was Jennifer Aniston from Friends. She immediately shot up and got like 15 million followers, like the first 48 hours she joined. And that was all-time hysteria. And then Matthew McConaughey, who is very known, well, and loved here in Austin, Texas, big-time hook 'em horns guy from Texas. He joined Instagram, and the debut post came from Ricky Fowler, it seemed like. I tried to track it back, and Ricky posted a nice little picture of the two of them out on the course together and welcomed him to Instagram officially. So another aging celebrity has joined Instagram in an attempt to connect with the younger fans. So we'll see if there's more material from Ricky and Matthew McConaughey. But shout out to Ricky Fowler for getting that scoop on the social media scene.
Yeah. Yeah. So it'll be interesting.
Good stuff.
Hey, let's turn our attention to pop politics, Alex. It's a Tuesday. It's November 5th. It is an election day across the country. Most states are holding some sort of election. I voted today. Did you vote?
Absolutely not. And you crushed me for it. And you can do it again. I thought we were waiting till next year. I thought, isn't the plan that we're all on board for next year, right? That's the big one?
We're going to be voting next year as well, but you want to vote every opportunity you get because it is a privilege living in these United States of America.
I love that.
You get to voice your concern at the ballot box.
Put the fiddle behind it there. I love that. Very patriotic of you there.
Exactly.
What was important to you or what stuck out to you in the vote today?
I only had two things I could vote for because I live in unincorporated Savannah, so I don't get to vote for the mayor or any council members or anything like that. So I got to vote on the special plan land something or other tax, the SPLOST tax, as they call it, and some other tax,
tax.
I got to vote on taxes. It was real exciting.
Good stuff. Hey, keep them down. My thing. Keep taxes like your golf scores. Keep them low.
Yeah, keep them low. But fund the things that need to be funded. We can't survive on zero taxes.
I credit you. I commend you, Mike, because this was not on my radar at all. You brought this up to me earlier, and I was like, holy crap, it is a Tuesday in November. It didn't dawn on me, but that is just your reminder, and let this serve as your annual reminder out there that you can actually vote every single year. It's not a once every 4 year thing. So get out there and let your voice be heard.
There'll be elections starting as we turn the calendar for the presidential race, but there's one less person running for the Democratic ticket now.
I love that.
Beto O'Rourke is out. He's done. He called it quits. He can't. He's not going to come and take away your AR-15s because he's not going to run for president. So
he's not. Shout out to Beto, Mike. probably the most well-loved politician who is 0-2. Yeah. He lost to Ted Cruz, and everyone took their Beto for Senate bumper stickers here in Austin, and they scratched out the word Senate, and they put president instead right above it, just like a Cleveland Brown quarterback jersey, if you get my drift. Yep. And then that failed as well. So Beto is 0-2. We shout out to him for putting the effort forth. But Mike, you love the field being trimmed. You're obsessed with it, and it's actually happening for real, finally.
And there's another one which may be soon on the horizon. Julian Castro,
another Texan,
let go of all of his staffers in both New Hampshire and South Carolina. His campaign saying because they want to focus more in Iowa and Nevada. But if you're not focusing on New Hampshire, I don't know why you're running a campaign.
Nevada. What's it? What goes on out there besides Vegas? Anything at all? I didn't realize that was on the radar of candidates right now.
Pretty soon the Raiders will go lose there. So,
That's right. So Julian Castro needs to come out in the black and silver. He should just be in all Raiders attire right now. That should be the move for him. If it's desperation time right now, if he's firing his staff, so.
With a corn hat on his head for Iowa.
That's right. Yeah. There's going to be a lot of corn themed fanfare soon. I know we already had like the Iowa State Fair kind of season that happened like a month or two ago. I remember seeing that, but there's going to be a lot of focus on the state of Iowa. This is their time to shine once every 4 years. It's officially Iowa season in pop politics.
And as soon as Iowa season's over, it's New Hampshire season.
Indeed, so, your OG home state gets time to shine as well.
The OG home. Hey, let's move on to this week's featured guest. We're digging into the archives to bring back a conversation we had with Cyrus Jansen.
Who's the pro at Shayshon there, where they had the tournament last weekend. So if you watched the tournament last weekend, this is a great listen because he quite literally knows that course inside and out. And he offers great perspective on that and a whole lot more.
That and about his food adventures, which we love to hear about food adventures in general. So we'll get into that conversation in just a second. But first, is your golf bag starting to see the wear and tear from all the rounds of golf you've been putting in? Visit Izzo Golf's website at www.izzo.com. Select one of the world's finest golf bags. Whether you like to walk or take the cart, Izzo has three different kinds of bags to choose from. Whether you choose the Gemini, the Versa, or the Light, get free personalization on the front ball pocket. Get your name, initials, championship title, or whatever else you may like right on the bag so that your bag is unique to you. Choose from multiple different color combos and features. And don't forget to use the promo code PODCAST to get 25% off your order. Again, that's promo code PODCAST at www.izzo.com.
Next up on the tee is a man and a golfer who is now officially a recurring guest on the Course of Life. Cyrus, I didn't think that we were going to scare you away. Unfortunately, we didn't. So credit to you for being brave enough to join us again. It's Cyrus Jansen. How's everything going this evening?
Alex, is going very well. And thank you for having me on the show again. I'm very honored to be a return guest.
Definitely. So if you haven't already out there, be sure to go back and listen to our last conversation in March, where Cyrus got a lot into the culture and the lifestyle of living, golfing, and working in Shanghai, where he had been the golf pro and head pro at Shayshon Golf Club. Talked a lot about his experience out there. It's definitely worth a listen if you missed it. So like I mentioned, it's at CyrusPGA on Instagram, and you profile your food and golf adventure a lot. I've seen a lot hidden in your Instagram stories recently, which is kind of what sparked this conversation. And for those of you who hadn't heard the previous conversation, like I mentioned, Cyrus spent a lot of time in Asia and Shanghai area specifically. I'm curious, Cyrus, from a food perspective for you, when you first went out there to take that job in Shanghai, how did your diet or eating kind of perspective change when you first made that move out there?
Yeah, when you're living in Shanghai, it's amazing because you have just a melting pot of many people from all over the world, and then certainly all different types of Chinese as well. We've got people from the West, the North, the South, everybody coming to the big city. So there's a lot of international food, and there's a lot of different types of Chinese cuisine as well. So What was really nice is, you know, when we go out for Western food, you know, sometimes we'd go to Brazilian steakhouses, you know, we'd go to Indian restaurants. And that was really the first time in my life that I was really exposed to Indian food and started eating it quite regularly. So I not only did I learn a lot about Chinese food, but it was really food from all over the world. And that was kind of the neat thing about Shanghai, that, you know, you really had a plethora of people from different cultures and backgrounds. And so you had a plethora of restaurants accordingly. So it was really great to if you're a foodie, I mean, it's a great spot to be.
Yeah. So let's dispel that myth for all the Westerners like myself who have, you know, just been to the United States or maybe a couple other countries and haven't truly experienced the finest in Asian cuisine. It's a lot more than fried rice and meat in brown sauce. Talk a little bit about kind of the variety that you see in Asian cuisine from your travels.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, so the big thing in China is, you know, when I was living in the States, I actually loved Chinese food. I would go to like the all-you-can-eat Chinese buffet in Florida, you know, every weekend. And I was like, man, I just love it. And
what were your, ironically, what were your go-tos?
Well, you know, like the General Tso's chicken and the, you know, the fried rice, anything, you know, I think the General Tso's, I love that, and the sweet and sour pork. And so, you know, just the kind of the staples that you're used to. Yeah. And ironically, my roommate was from China, and, you know, he would go with us, and he's like, gosh, this food is just awful. You know, he's like, if you ever had the chance to go to China, you would really realize that Chinese people, we don't eat any of this stuff. Like, this is not Chinese food at all. It's really right. Americanized Chinese food. And that kind of got my curiosity. I'm like, well, what is it like? You know, and so, you know, several years later, I had the opportunity to go to China to work. And what's neat about, you know, for instance, in Shanghai, they use a lot of sauces. It's particularly sweet. So there's a lot more sauces. You know, a standard dish maybe would be a fish with a, you know, a brown sauce on top of it, but it's a little bit sweet to it. There's a lot of sugar in there. You know, as you go down south, you know, towards Hong Kong is where the dim sum is really from, you know, and they have all just hundreds of different types of dim sum. Kind of the staple would be the shrimp dumpling that's, you know, most foreigners would probably be used to, but there's really a lot of different types of varieties. When you go up north, there is the, you know, in Beijing, a lot more noodles that, you know, that you would have in your diet. There's the, you know, the northeastern cuisine has a lot of breads as well. That's quite nice. And what was very interesting is out in the very far west province of China, there's a province called Xinjiang, which translates to new frontier. And that's you know, a predominantly Muslim population on that side. And it's so far from Beijing, it's really almost like another country. So, you know, because they're Muslim, there's no pork there. So they eat a tremendous amount of lamb and breads. And it's, you know, very, very tasty food. So it was so much fun living in China because you have, like I mentioned, so many different types of cuisine just from one country, you know, and I got a chance to taste them all.
Yeah, that's a lot broader spectrum than us Americans know, you know, general Chinese food as. So interesting to hear that perspective for sure. I'm curious from like a cooking standpoint, you know, whether it be, you know, you going out and hanging out in a social setting or just kind of yourself like at home, did you kind of, how quickly did your diet or your cooking habits changed as you got to kind of experience all the different foods in the different sectors of China?
Yeah, you know, I think from as far as my cooking myself, I didn't really cook a lot at home because it was just so much more convenient to go out to eat or to get takeout. It was pretty much, you know, very, very, very little cost in China. And kind of the nice thing in Shanghai that I always said is there's really something for every budget. You know, if you really want to go to a high-end 5-star restaurant, they've got that. And if you really want to eat local food that's very affordable and certainly cheaper than cooking at home, you know, that's on the table as well. And so I think as far as my diet, you know, I would, you know, I was definitely more curious, you know, I would kind of just be open to everything. You know, I did try to eat a little bit healthier and get some more vegetables and things like that in my diet. And, you know, but I was very active. I was, you know, full-time golf coaching. I was, you know, running a golf course. I mean, I was working 6 days a week and, you know, often 7 days a week in the summer. So I was, you know, pretty active. So I would just say I'd kind of eat whatever I wanted to and just, you know, because of the nature of my work, I would be able to stay fit and, you know, be good.
Absolutely. Yeah. Having the balance of being on the course and walking rounds and whatnot definitely helps the ability to be a little bit more lenient on the diet for sure. I'm curious, sure. Cyrus, what was the craziest or maybe cringiest or food item that you ate that you were very unsure of going in that maybe was a pleasant surprise or something like that in your travels?
Yeah. You know, well, I remember the very first day that I arrived in China, I was at nighttime And my colleagues, you know, from the Golf Academy had come to pick me up, and they're like, oh, we're going to go to this restaurant. I said, great. And then, you know, the first thing was, you know, they're like, well, we want to get some chicken legs or, you know, chicken feet. Are you happy with that? And I was like, well, I've never had it, but yeah, let's give it a go. You know, I'm sure. I've come to live in China, you know, might as well go all in. So that's become kind of a staple. And even now when I go to dim sum restaurants, that's one of the first things I order. I love the taste of it. It tastes really, really great. But probably the most interesting thing is if you ever go to Beijing, there's a very famous street called the Wangfujing Street. And that street has about 60 stalls that are just all these little red tents set up right in a row. And it's really a tourist destination. And people go there, and it's kind of like this night market tourist feel. But there's the most unusual food you'll ever find in the world down this line. And I'll give you some examples. On that line, you'll be able to find starfish, sea urchins, you know, scorpions,
oh, wow,
snakes, deer testicles. I mean, just kind of the most random, craziest things that you ever imagine. And a lot of people are like, golly, the Chinese people eat like this. And they don't. I mean, it's not like a regular staple of their diet. It's just more, you know, it's for fun, you know. And so anyways, the most unusual thing was, as I saw the scorpions, and I was like, yeah, I got to try that, because that's got to, I mean, just to get the photo and to get the story to be able to tell the people was worth it. And they actually had two varieties. They had a smaller scorpion that was a little bit less intimidating, and they had a much thicker one that was, you know, three times the size and very thick and looked to be very juicy. And so I opted for the smaller one, and, you know, they deep fry it. So honestly, it tastes like a potato chip. There's really no taste to it, you know, but I couldn't really bear the, you know, to try the big scorpions because, well, one, I had to pay for it. So I guess if I was on a game show and I had a lot of money to win, I'm sure I could have done it. But I didn't feel like paying money out of my own pocket to, you know, try to eat that big scorpion.
Yeah, I probably would have just dipped my toe in the water and just gone for the small one as well for you, yeah, too. And it's funny, you know, you mentioned that we kind of have this perspective of the crazy and wild foods that we know from an outsider perspective that are in China. But, you know, on our end, if you walk through an American street fair, you can see, you know, bugs for sale and, you know, alligator that's fried up and tastes just like a chicken tender. So, you know, we're on the crazy spectrum, too, in terms of the things that we're willing to try from a food perspective. So.
Absolutely.
So let's bring it now back to the Western culture now, where you're located, Vancouver, and the Canadian culture. A lot of people didn't, and I didn't realize this at first until I'd seen a lot more publications about the food culture recently in the Vancouver area, is that Asian food is very popular. Explain the popularity of Asian food specifically in the area where you live in Canada now.
Yeah, so I'm in Vancouver, and more specifically, I'm in the suburb called Richmond, which is actually just a city south of Vancouver. It's actually where the Vancouver International Airport is located. So if you ever fly into Vancouver, you're flying right into Richmond. Okay. Richmond is its own city. It's the fourth largest city in British Columbia. But again, it's just one bridge away from Vancouver. But what's interesting with Richmond is that it's about, you know, over 70% Asian population within Richmond, and, you know, a tremendous amount of Chinese, you know, make up that large contingent of Asian people here. So it's probably the biggest, you know, Chinatown, I'd say, in the world, because, you know, you have so many people here that you can, you know, you can walk into an HSBC bank in downtown Richmond and the signs are in, you know, Chinese, the paper slips that you sign are in Chinese, all the tellers are Chinese, all the customers are Chinese. I mean, wow. You wouldn't know that you're in Vancouver, Canada, or in Canada at all. And right. So it's quite a neat place that they, you know, and a lot of people actually say the best Chinese food in the world is in Vancouver, because you have the authentic people and chefs that have come from either Hong Kong or China or Taiwan. You know, they've come and relocated to Canada, and then you have the fresh ingredients of, you know, the Canadian farms. And so when you melt the two together, you know, you have authentic Chinese food with even fresher ingredients, and they really make some amazing, amazing food here. So I've had a lot of Chinese people tell me that, like, you know, the food here is actually better than China. I've lived in China. I mean, it is some amazing dim sum restaurants, seafood restaurants, things like of that nature. But we're really unique. You know, we have the Richmond Night Market, which is an amazing festival that's held throughout the summer season. So I think it's every Friday and Saturday night, and it attracts over 10,000 people. You know, per night that it's opened. I mean, it's like a big carnival and fair, and there's loads of, you know, vendors selling all different types of food. So it's really a neat experience because I my parents had come to Asia to visit me once, and then they came to Vancouver, and I said, hey, you know, you don't really need to go back to China again. We can just come here and we can get all the authentic street food and kind of, you know, get the hustle and bustle of being with 10,000 people in a small campground. And, you know, it feels exactly like China, you know, but then we can come back to our place in Richmond and have a little bit more space.
Yeah, that's a perfect transition, Cyrus. I want to get into the night market and the things specifically that are there with some of the more popular vendors. The picture that really spawned this conversation, and we discussed it on our podcast a couple weeks ago, was the picture that you posted of an Instagram story of what appeared to be squid. Now, can you tell us, was that truly raw squid or was it grilled at all? And how was that prepared? We'll tweet that picture out my Twitter at Course of Life One for everyone who hasn't seen it. But what was that specifically?
Actually, you're right. It was squid, but it was cooked. So it wasn't completely raw. And what it was, it's actually kind of just cooked in this chili oil. So it has a really nice kick to it, you know, nice spice. So if you like something spicy, this is a spicy squid. And it's really great. And that's a really common thing that you know, people love in China is being able to get that squid. And they, I think they had five or six different flavors that you could go, but that was the standard one. That's kind of the more popular one for sure. So that was a great treat. My wife and I, we both really liked that one a lot. So that was good. And it's neat because being in Richmond, obviously in Canada, there's a lot of fusion. And so they do have, things. I think I had like a chicken and waffle sandwich as well, which was, the fried chicken and waffle is certainly more of a Western thing. So they have the Western things, and then they have some of the staples of the Asian cuisine as well.
People are wondering at home. They're listening and they're wondering, but what was that squid like when you bite in? What was the consistency like? What was it, kind of red meat chicken-ish, or did it have that true seafood kind of squirmy-ish bite in?
Yeah, definitely more seafood. Definitely more seafood. Very soft, but it wasn't anything really gross because it had a little bit more texture to it. Because it was cooked. So I think if it was completely raw, it might be a little mushy or just, kind of disintegrate in your mouth. So this one, you had to give it a little bit of a chew. And again, those spicy flavors come in really nicely. So it tasted great, actually.
A couple other things I wanted to touch on at this Richmond night market that you talked about before and I'd seen online. They have something called Dragon's Beard Candy, I noticed. This is essentially like a hand-pulled, like cotton candy-ish looking dessert. Is this something that you've seen before, either in Richmond or in China before?
I haven't seen it in China. I have seen it in Richmond. I think it's kind of one of those fusion things that they're trying to, attract, just the people here. And, you have a lot of Caucasians and people from other ethnicities that go there as well, not just Asians. So I think it's kind of a hybrid, item that you have. I have not seen that in China. One of the other staples there is these skewers, and you can get either a chicken, beef, or lamb skewers. And particularly in the Beijing and Northeast China area, the lamb skewers is really a staple. And I quite like lamb. It's, growing up in Florida, I didn't really, wasn't exposed to lamb that much until I had moved to China. And I realized, wow, it's a big staple there, especially in the North. So every time I'd go to Beijing on business trips, we'd go for big lamb meals and have lamb skewers and kind of the socialite when you're going around Beijing is that you often find vendors on the side of the street grilling lamb skewers and selling, beers of Qingdao beer. So it was a great little late evening snack, a lamb skewer with some beer.
Yeah, very cool perspective. That does sound like a great combo as well, too. So before we wrap it and I get to my very American food questions, I want to tie this in since you have spent your life around the game of golf. I'm curious kind of how food works into, either you preparing to play an important round or things that you like to have on the course food-wise, because there's a lot of golfers out there that kind of struggle with when and how to eat the day that they play and how to eat, most successfully to help yield better results on the course. What are kind of suggestions that you would give for amateur golfers out there kind of looking to improve their diet and golf game at the same time?
Great question. I do want to give a shout out to the First Tee Shot energy drink, because I know that they sponsor the podcast, but they've also sponsored me as well. And I've been using their product, starting this year. And I really, it is a good little boost. You know, I like the fact that there's no sugar in it and that, you know, it's all natural. So big shout out to them. They've been a big sponsor of mine and helped me out a lot. So I do like to drink that drink before, you know, if it's an important round, I'll drink that, you know, about 30 minutes before I tee off. The big thing for me is really just staying hydrated, you know, because when I'm in contention and I'm playing well and sometimes I'll just kind of get zoned in and, you know, you don't feel thirst until, you know, it's too late, you know? So, I realize that, you know, sometimes I'll forget a water bottle and I'll just play through until the end. And then I'm absolutely gassed on those last two holes. Whereas if I have a water bottle with me, I'll end up drinking a lot more through the round. So a big thing for me is one, stay hydrated. And then two is I eat a lot of simple things. So I always pack a big bag of almonds and walnuts, you know, they have, you know, a lot of healthy fats, a lot of calories in there. So I can kind of snack on that throughout. I don't really eat anything much more than that. I'd say really just a really big thing for me is just the hydration, making sure that I drink a lot on the golf course. You know, I'm pretty much sipping at least every hole, you know, drinking a little bit of water.
Good stuff. Great advice there for golfers trying to kind of improve their food regimen in turn with their golf game as well. And one other golf related food question I wanted to ask you, Cyrus, is regarding something that your wife did for you. You had a Masters outing that you previously posted about where you got a nice little remake of their classic pimento cheese and egg salad sandwiches. I'm curious what your thoughts were on those. That's an item we talked a lot about during Masters season on this podcast. Yeah. A preference between the two, and what are your thoughts on maybe a sandwich like that during the round?
Oh, you know, that was really a cool tradition we started last year. We did speaking of the wife, there she's calling me right now.
Wow, that was perfect timing.
It is. I've actually got to run and go pick up my daughter in a little bit from school. But so the pimento cheese is actually obviously it's synonymous with the Masters, and my wife started this tradition where every Masters Saturday, what we did is we'd have a skins game at our local golf course, and she decided to make these sandwiches for all the boys. So we had eight guys that would play, and so she'd make sandwiches, and then she also did a salmon sandwich, because here in BC, it's very popular to eat salmon. So, you know, I like them both. And I think on that day it was just it's always nice to have a little sandwich as well. But if you can get a pimento cheese, I'll add that in the regimen too, right between the nines, pimento cheese, it's the way to go in honor of the Masters.
Great stuff. One last question I want to ask you. So again, for everyone at home, it's at Cyrus PGA on Instagram. He's always posting a lot about his life in golf, but also his food adventures as well, as he's documented with us today. And I want you to set the scene for us if we're coming over and it's a party. So we're inviting ourselves over for the night. I'm curious, Perfect. You know, what's a typical meal that you would like to either grill or cook in the kitchen for guests? And what's maybe the Jansen specialty that you guys like to serve to guests?
Oh, you know, my wife has this dish that she makes. It's that I call it the chicken dish. And she has this homemade recipe that she did one night while we were traveling. We went to a local market. We were in Argentina in Buenos Aires, and she got some chicken, she got some red peppers, she got some tomatoes, and she made this amazing sauce. And she grills these chicken thighs, and it's just tasted so good that I asked her to make it for me every night. So I had that when she first made that dish. I ate it five consecutive nights in a row because it was amazing. So it's kind of the standard thing. I told her, I joked, I said, you know, if one of our boys ends up winning the Masters, you know, it's going to be on the menu, you know, for the champions dinner. It's like mom's chicken dish, you know? So I think that's the go-to when we got somebody coming over. So Alex, when you come over to the house for dinner, get ready for the chicken dish, because that's what we're serving.
Love it. I can picture it on the Masters menu now, Tuesday before the 2039 Masters. I'm thinking, is that the game plan at this point? So, you know, hopefully one of the kiddos will be there to serve mom's chicken for sure. Cyrus, appreciate the time again. Looking forward to more of your food and golf adventures, and we'll be catching up with you soon. All right.
Alex, thank you so much for the time, and big fan of the podcast and always honored to be on here. Thank you, buddy.
We're back. That was Cyrus Jansen. Great to hear his voice again on the pod, even if that is from the archives. He just has crazy stories. It's just cool to listen to him again.
Indeed. Definitely a world traveler. Good perspective on the course that we saw last weekend on the Golf Channel and everything food culture-wise that he's seen in his travels. And I know he's listening. Thanks again, Cyrus, for joining us. We'll be sure to have him on again. And there's some more food guests coming in the pipeline. I don't know. Ooh. It's just that holiday season, Mike. It's getting me hungry. This is when I dig into some extra recipes on the weekend, and there's going to be some food chatter coming up, not only in this episode, but in weeks to come. So look forward to it.
Can't wait. You know what else we can't wait for? You to finally start getting your college football bets right again.
Oh, no. That was a mean segue burn there. Sick burn. God. Yeah. This has been rough. I said I was fluttering last week. So I don't know what happens like when you're a bird. If you're fluttering, I guess I've lost a wing is what it is. I'm a bird flying with one wing right now. So
you're losing altitude fast.
I am. Yes. I'm still hovering just barely above 500 on my picks this year. So all things considered, if you played every single game that I bet, again, my Twitter's at Course of Life One. I throw out a card every Saturday morning where you can bet college football just like I do. Nothing crazy, just a few dollars a game to get the juices flowing. Followed up a 5-6 week last week with 5-7 this past weekend. It's been rough. I'm having a good time with the big games, ironically. So I think I'm just going to go big game hunting this weekend. I'm going to bet the biggest ones, and the biggest one is LSU Alabama this coming weekend. That's going to be either 1-2 or 1-3, depending on how the polls shake out. So look for my action on that on my Twitter at Course of Life One. But Mike, the one other thing I wanted to tell you about, and you saw it because I was getting desperate at a certain point on Saturday. And yeah. I bet on bacon on Saturday night.
Not Kevin Bacon.
No, not. I wish I could have bet on Kevin Bacon because that guy's an automatic.
I'd take that bet all day, every day. Yeah,
he's a lock. So Utah State had a great promo that in an effort to get all the fans and the students in there early for their game for BYU, they issued 200 pounds of free bacon at the door for the first people to get in from one of their like pork like sponsors, who's a stadium sponsor. Great promotion, Mike. Unfortunately, Utah State got it handed to them and they lost the game. So bacon promotion, no mas. It didn't work.
That's unfortunate because bacon is, of course, the best
it's
in everything.
It's the great unifier.
No matter what.
It was sad to see. Yeah.
It's too bad. Hey, you know what, though? The Georgia area has been a-buzzing this weekend because there were two big wins in Georgia. Of course, UGA beat Florida.
They did, yes.
Huge win.
The world's largest cocktail party. Nice win for the Dogs there.
Yep. And even bigger news is that local here to Savannah, Georgia Southern University beat number 20 Appalachian State. Go Eagles.
Yes. Shout out to Statesboro on the map with a win. And we joked about this team last year because they had an electric bowl win with a walk-off field goal, if you remember, to cap a very triumphant season for them, which I think they got the double-digit wins on. They still have a path to that, Mike. They got two losses on the season. They're going to be back in some crappy bowl game for sure, but maybe we can get them into the conference championship and generate some Eagles buzz down there. How about it?
Yeah, I mean, if the Eagles can win the Sun Belt, and they played Appalachian State, is an in-conference rival, so that's probably who they'd have to beat to win the conference. It could be good bowl game. Hilton.
Love life in the Sun Belt, aka the Fun Belt. And Mike, I just saw the tweet a couple days ago. Quite literally, the day that we recorded this started the official streak where there is now a college or NFL football game on every single night for the rest of the year.
Oh, goodness.
Yes, every year.
It's not bowl season, but it's football season.
It's meaningless Maction season. It's meaningless Fun Belt games, and I'm here for all of it. So, again, follow me at Course of Life One Twitter for all those picks in football.
Speaking of meaningless, let's talk about the NFL. Let's talk about the Dolphins.
Yes.
They won a game.
They
beat the Jets. And, of course, as we all understand logic, we understand now the Dolphins, by beating the Jets, who beat the Cowboys, the Dolphins are better than the Cowboys.
Wow.
Simple logic.
That's just an if-so facto right there. All you have to do is connect two dots to arrive at that conclusion, Mike. Yeah, the Dolphins getting their first W of the year, and fairly easily, too, by more than a score at home. Jets fans, gotta be feeling pretty low after a Sunday like that when you can't beat a winless team and the Dolphins got on the board.
I think maybe what hurts even more is the black cat at MetLife Stadium Monday night for the Cowboys-Giants game, where the cat went into the end zone and was in the end zone for longer than the Jets have been in the end zone at MetLife Stadium.
Ooh, yeah. A little nice burn at MetLife, and also a rough night for your Giants, too.
And the Giants suck. Season was over before it started. So
decent first half, absolutely horrible second half. I guess the black cat was part of the curse in the evening there. Three receptions, 114 yards, and a touchdown. Those are the official stats for the cat. They were tracking how far it was running across the field, Mike, and it covered a lot of ground. So shout out to the black cat that ran on the field.
The Giants should get that into the receiving corps.
Could be an option for Daniel Jones late in the season. Yeah. Injuries deplete the receiving core, it's something to look at. So black cat on the field, Monday Night Football. And then, of course, elephant in the room. Yes, Mike, thank you. Thank you for texting me on Monday and asking me if I was okay.
I wanted to make sure you were still, okay.
I am
because
okay.
Because your Patriots lost.
Yes, it's been almost, I actually looked, this is crazy. This is another crazy stat. It's been almost 10 and a half months since the Patriots last lost a football game, which is insane. Which is nuts.
Who didn't know what it was like.
I think my friend's son, and he knows who he is because he's listening, was born and has yet to be alive for a Patriots loss until Sunday night. The Patriots finally drop one to Lamar Jackson, the Ravens. They broke out that half shotgun offense. Lamar Jackson was running up and down on the Patriots defense. Definitely some things to look at for later in the season, but Ravens impressive win at home, 37-20. Of course, Mike, you know, the classic fans in New England, the sky's falling, you know, everything's a mess. You know, what are we ever going to do?
Over.
Yeah.
Season's
over. Yes. Fortunately, I'm 9 years removed from living in that lifestyle and I'm relaxed in Texas now. And I realize that the season's not over. Everything will be just fine. But yes, first blip in the radar for the Pats officially, which means that the 49ers.
Jimmy W,
a.k.a. Jimmy G, a.k.a. Jimmy Garoppolo, a.k.a. everyone's favorite hot Italian quarterback, are the only unbeaten team in the NFL.
The Tom Brady disciple left the student and will eventually return the teacher.
Wow. Amazing storyline unfolding on the West Coast there. So shout out to the Niners, indeed, keeping it going.
Are we on a possible collision course here?
I've been saying it for a few weeks now. I mean, listen, I would say this, the NFC is going to be tougher to get through in terms of playoff picture.
Yes.
The Patriots just have the breaks in the AFC. You know, Patrick Mahomes might not be 100% for the Chiefs later when he comes back. We'll see how that plays out. Outside of a team like the Ravens, I don't know really who could go into Foxborough and win a game besides those two teams I just mentioned. So it's going to be tougher on the 49ers to get there, but collision course indeed. We'll keep it alive.
We had a collision course in Game 7 of the World Series, which wrapped up right after we recorded last week's episode. And the Washington Nationals are World Series champions. Go Expos.
Yes, that's right. The move from Montreal finally completed. Steven Strasburg, too. I feel like you and me have been talking about Steven Strasburg like he's this mythical figure for like
a decade. The day he was drafted.
Yeah, I know. Like, we've heard more about this guy than maybe any other baseball player in the last decade, just because he's been hyped since he was in high school, and he finally delivered in the World Series.
I think he was the most hyped draft pick of all time in baseball. I feel like no one else. You hear these hypes about all these things, but never did you have a guy who everyone knew about when he was drafted.
For sure. Yeah, so shout out to him.
Incredible.
Shout out to the Natitude. They got it done. Yep. DC, little bit of a title town now with the Capitals, Stanley Cup, the Nationals. They got a WNBA title. They got three on the board. Maybe
the
more
best
to come.
Best Not teams bad. In DC. The best. No one but winners
that's
in
right.
DC.
So shout out to the nation's capital. I will officially say that's probably going to be a soft wrap on baseball for us for the time being. We'll pop in for the hot stove during the winter. We'll see what happens.
It's going to be see what happens. Garrett Cole really kind of raised his middle finger up to the
that was
the
harsh
Houston Astros.
That was
after,
harsh. 10 minutes after he lost the World Series, he delivered a press conference with his agent's hat on, saying that I'm no longer an employee of the team. Yep. That's just a ruthless, sore loser move right there. But he'll get paid.
Garrett I know CC's been talking to Garrett about how great it is to play in New York. So come on over to the Big Apple. We're really looking forward to having you join the rotation. It's going to be great.
Yeah, good stuff. And then my before we get to our all-important food news, my basketball blip, since we're touching on all sports, I'm going to give you my first NBA report of the year, Mike, on Saturday.
Nice.
So I'm heading to San Antonio for Celtics Spurs. I admittedly have not tuned into much NBA. All I can tell you right now is everyone on the Warriors who you know, Mike, is injured and they suck. So you can forget about them for the time being. Cool. LA is fun because of the Clippers and the Lakers. And we're going to find out on Saturday if the Celtics are legit playing in San Antonio. So I'm going to do a little river walk. I'll remember the Alamo and see that real quick. And I'll have myself a day and I'll report back next week.
That'll be nice. You know, it is a Tuesday evening right now. It is the start of the Quinnipiac University women's basketball season.
Yes, that's right.
They are literally playing right now. Actually, I'm going to pull up the score to see if the game has ended. It did. I don't want to talk about it.
All right. Good talk.
Not a good start.
And we'll address that next week. Good. That's the in-depth sports college analysis that you know, love, and needed. And with that, it's time for our odds and ends, because this was a weird thing. You know, we exchanged notes during the week, Mike, and food just kept popping up left and right. There was a lot going on in our life food related.
It brings us together.
Yeah. Where do you want to go first with this? There's a few different things we can touch on right now.
Let's talk about Popeyes. Let's go there first.
Okay. Yeah. So the chicken sandwiches, right?
The chicken sandwich. We both grew up in New England where there whenever was a Chick-fil-A, unless you went to the mall, and then they were closed on Sundays after the gay pride parade. So we never could go and, you know, eat our chicken, which was always depressing. I have had Chick-fil-A. I'm sure you have as well.
It's everywhere. It's literally, I could hit a driver to it from my house right now.
I will say what you will about their corporate politics. They make damn fine chicken.
They do. Yes. You got to put that aside. It's that good.
Yeah. I have not been to a Popeyes in a long time. The one time I went once years ago and I never liked anything I had there. I don't know if I'm going to make the trek out to go try one of their sandwiches. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's worth it.
So my question was, do you care? I don't really care. I'm going to do the side by side. I'm just really annoyed by the hype. I don't know why. I'm erroneously and irrationally bothered by the hype around the Popeyes chicken sandwich. It just frustrates me that there's still lines down the street. There's one a mile away from where I work, Mike, and it's still a crazy line. I drove by it the other day. It's nuts. The hysteria is beyond belief.
Is the line at Popeyes for the sandwich as long as the line at Chick-fil-A is for lunch on a weekday?
At least double, Mike.
Okay.
It's insane. It really bothers me. I will, for the content and for the pod, I'll do it in the next few weeks. I'll go to both on a Saturday or Sunday, and I'll get them both, and I'll report
back.
Well,
not on a Sunday. You can't do it on a Sunday.
Wow. Jesus. It's got to be a Saturday then. I work like the rest of the world, so it's going to have to be on a Saturday. So I'll report back. I don't really have a strong preference. I would lean Chick-fil-A just overall from top to bottom on the menu, sandwiches, tenders, and everything else. So I'll give it an honest feedback, and I'll put my dismay to the side for Popeyes and let you know how I feel.
I think we're going to schedule this. We're going to make it happen together so we can talk about it together. We're going to make this happen.
I like that.
We'll make it happen. Let's move on to another favorite of mine, Krispy Kreme.
Yes. Okay. The entrepreneur. Yeah. So I was all over the story. So for anyone who doesn't know, there was an entrepreneur who lived in Minnesota, a 21-year-old kid, very, very entrepreneurial, very smart guy, realized that he could drive. It's quite a drive. 270 miles to be exact. He drove 270 miles back and forth. And what he would do is he would collect close to 100 dozen Krispy Kreme donuts, drive from Minnesota, Iowa, pick up the donuts, bring them back to Minnesota, and sell him at the store he worked at and locally to make a little extra profit. It's a smart hustle. There are no Krispy Kremes within hours of where he lived, and he was making hand over fist money. His goal was to be debt free by the time he graduated college. Very, very honorable goal.
And
Krispy Kreme, Mike, had the audacity.
They caught wind.
They threw him a cease and desist, basically.
They did. Well, I don't blame them. He was reselling their product. That makes sense. It's like, you know, if you went into you know, Chick-fil-A and you bought a chicken sandwich and you turn around out on the curb and you try to sell it for $20 for someone who doesn't want to wait in line.
I get it. I get why they did it. But like on the surface, they had to know exactly what was coming back at them as soon as the story became public.
Well.
The internet got its revenge, Mike.
They did.
Big time. So since this story leaked, quite within 24 hours, I got the update. I was like, oh, wow, this story just spun on its head. Krispy Kreme, after having this news go very public and very viral, everyone became very upset. They wanted the entrepreneur to continue his cause, let Kyle keep getting those donuts. And lo and behold, they sent him a letter reversing their course and allowing him to be an independent distributor. And he can go get as many donuts and drive as far as he wants and bring them wherever he wants. So basically, this is just a win for the outcry and the outrage on Twitter because they did it. They made Krispy Kreme buckle and change everything they said 24 hours prior.
I give it 18 months before a Krispy Kreme opens in Minnesota.
Yeah, that's the thing is they should just take advantage of the business opportunity and
we
just
supposedly
open.
Had one there and then they closed it because it didn't do well. But obviously there is still a business need for a Krispy Kreme there.
That is on them. That is on them for not making it happen.
Also a personal need for Krispy Kreme to open up right across the street from me, but I don't know if that's going to happen.
Yes, so, right. Well, we can only dream, right?
Yeah. We can only dream. let's transition from one donut place to another. Let's talk about Dunkin' Donuts. Dunkin'.
Oh, yeah. I added the donuts in there, too. I forgot. They dropped it.
Well, yeah. They'll always be Dunkin' Donuts to us.
Yeah. So this is interesting. For anyone who listened, and they're an OG, they remember the saga last year. So
yeah.
It's the holiday season, Mike, and usually mid-November – Dunkin' Donuts. Sorry, not Dunkin' Donuts. Dunkin'. Yeah. They'd be coming with Dunkin'. The peppermint mocha flavor, aka the candy cane coffee, which I love so much in my iced coffee in the holiday season. Well, last year, they just completely opted out of peppermint mocha. They chose not to release it. They went with other flavors. They released a half-assed mint mocha in like January when the season was well beyond gone. And I tweeted my displeasure. Well, lo and behold, a few days ago, from the absolute clouds, Dunkin' Donuts clapped back at me. They told me to drop the tude and let me know that peppermint mocha is back.
There you go.
Huge win for me there. I was very shocked to receive this. I posted a couple of Michael Scott, everybody calm down GIFs. This was a big moment for me, as you saw. And I've confirmed the rumors. They were tweeting back at all sorts of people. They started their own account at Peppermint Mocha on Twitter, if you want to follow. And they're doing a very guerrilla marketing technique where they're going after all the trolls from 2018 who hated on them. And they're clapping back and letting them know that, oh, peppermint mocha, very much back at Dunkin'. So salute to them for doing the right thing.
You know what? Another company that may not be doing the right thing in terms of flavors for Christmas.
What's that?
Is Coca-Cola.
Interesting.
They've announced two new drinks coming out for Christmas.
What, a Christmas Coke?
Christmas Coke.
No
the
way.
The first one here actually may not be too bad. Winter Spiced Cranberry Sprite.
Okay.
That may not be bad.
That could work.
Cranberry Sprite, not a bad idea. I don't know what this winter spice is going to do to it.
I know what that's going to do. It's going to make it taste like the smell of a pine tree. I've had that flavor many times. I guarantee that's it.
That sounds disgusting.
Place my bet on it. Yep.
The other one is Cinnamon Coke.
That's going to be a hard pass for me.
That's a very disgusting sounding drink to me.
Yeah. I mean, the flavorification of just every brand in America is getting insane right now. I mean, we're really trying to hit the seasonal market when Coke is going for two different rollouts and Cinnamon Coke. I don't know. That's a little bit too much spice going with the caffeine for me. I'm not sure if I can work with that. I'd be willing to go on a sip, but I don't think I commit to an entire bottle. That's a rough flavor for me.
I got problems with it. I do. It's just, I am not going to spend a dime on that drink. If someone wants to give me a taste of what they bought, then sure. But I will not buy it.
How about a six pack of those glass bottle cinnamon coke? Would you go? I know you're a sucker for those. Could I convince you to try it?
It doesn't matter if it's in a glass bottle or a can. It's cinnamon coke. I don't want it.
There it is. It's the hard and fast take. So that's the recap on our food issues. We had a lot come to the table this past week. So glad we got to air everything out just in time for the holiday season. We'll be looking out for a lot more holiday releases, and be sure to troll and dump on the bad ones coming up. And a lot more coming up next week as well, too.
Yeah, I got to do one more thing before we sign off.
Take us away.
On this Thursday is my wife's birthday. So, Abby, happy birthday.
Shout out to the missus, indeed.
Yes.
Good stuff. For Mike, I'm Alex. This has been another edition of The Course of Life. We'll see you all next week.